death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news on WGRN 94.1. You're listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Dr. Bob Fitrakis, WGRN 94.1. My guest and my law partner, Connie Goodell Newton.
Hello.
To The Other Side of the News.
All right.
What's happening, Connie? You're quite active in the Near East Side.
Yep, just working from home like everybody else, I suppose.
How's that going?
It's going all right. I just have my home office and I still go into court once in a while. But yeah, things are pretty good, Bob.
Any interesting cases?
Absolutely. Yeah, I have lots of interesting cases all the time. I won't give a lot of confidential details, but I'm wrapping up some of my protester cases. I have a pretty full caseload of regular misdemeanors and felonies. So yeah, a lot going on there. And, you know, I'm also in real estate. That is going pretty well right now. Interesting times, both in the criminal defense world and in real estate.
And you were involved in some of the cases concerning Black Lives Matter, were you not?
Yep. This summer, there were lots of protests downtown. Actually, in a way, just a few blocks from our office. We're located on East Broad Street, and a lot of the protesting and things that were going on were around Broad and High, around the State House. So it was pretty easy when I would get a call from activists to, you know, help people out, do an arraignment, things like that. So yeah, I have picked up a few cases and I'm just finishing up my final cases from last summer.
And what can you tell us, any difference between the way the police treated the Black Lives Matter activists and say maybe the way they were treated at the Capitol recently in Washington?
Oh, certainly, Bob. Yep, lots of big differences there. So, you know, the Capitol, U.S. Capitol, you saw police officers sometimes waving protesters to come into the building, taking selfies with them. I heard a story of a Black...
You didn't see that in Columbus with Black Lives Matter?
Not exactly. The police probably were taking pictures, but I don't know about selfies necessarily.
Well, they were playing quit hitting yourself. And you hit them with clubs and say, stop hitting yourself.
Pretty much. And then you also get like the, you know, high aggression from the police officers. And then, yeah, it's always the protesters who get charged with, you know.
And some of them, I won't mention any names, were charged quite seriously.
Absolutely. Yeah, Bob. You know, we like to think that, you know, hopefully they'll go easy on protesters because they are standing up for a First Amendment issue. They're trying to do the right thing, looking out for people in their community, speaking out against violence in our community. So, you know, you hope that their demonstrations will be respected. And if they are arrested, that, you know, that it that they're not going to just try to throw the book at them. But I do have clients who have been charged with felonies, you know, after the police were fairly violent in how they dealt with the crowd. And you saw that as a pattern throughout the summer, that there is escalating violence coming from the police. Meanwhile, Black Lives Matter activists were the ones being blamed, being called looters and, you know, things like that. When for the most part in Columbus, you had a lot of neighbors who were coming out of their homes very upset by how Black people are treated in our city and in other cities. And, you know, coming out to take a stand that we don't want our neighbors and our family members to be treated this way. So, unfortunately, there has been a very disproportionate police response. especially, you know, considering that many of the activists are young people, are Black, are queer people. You know, there has been a disproportionate response, just like you see a disproportionate response when often the police are dealing with the general public. It's well known that minorities and people of color, LGBT population, have a lot more issues when it comes to police violence. Whereas, you know, like many of the protesters were white at the U.S. Capitol, they were not viewed as much of a threat, and in fact were kind of welcomed in by some. And, you know, there were large numbers of those people who were actually ex-military or police officers. So, you know, clearly it's not an objective. They're not dealing with the situations objectively, is I guess what I would say.
Well, many have argued that if a, you know, 15,000 people of color invaded the Capitol, the only issue was how many bulldozers would you need to scoop up the dead and wounded bodies.
Absolutely. I mean, I would think that they would bring out the tanks if that was the case, Bob, you know, that they would just, you know, not hesitate. It's really sad to see how, you know, human life is viewed and valued and devalued in our society based on somebody's identity.
Well, where were the riot fences, right? I mean, you have these massive riot fences that you see all the time when progressives and people of color are demonstrating, but they weren't there. I mean, you know, you had these small kind of look almost like a fence to park your bike at rather than to protect the Capitol.
Well, that's convenient. They can just roll up, park their bike, and then hop on in.
So, anything coming out of these assaults, charges in Columbus?
I have many of those resolved. You know, so generally we're able to get a pretty good outcome for protesters. However, I would just say that the city has not been just dismissing cases. So, like as far as the results that I've been able to get on some of them, you know, disorderly conduct, you know, lower level misdemeanors, and, you know, things like that, but they are definitely not just dismissing cases or really going easy on people, in my opinion.
And again, other factors going on in the Near East Side. I know you're involved in real estate. Not only are you an attorney, but you sell real estate. The question of gentrification and large buildings that some suggest may be better suited for suburbia or sprawlburbia than in our neighborhood. Any thoughts on that?
Bob. You know, during these like times in the pandemic, housing is really at a premium. It's really, you know, basically rents right now are very expensive, even compared to what it would cost to own your own home. So, you know, it would be much cheaper to have a mortgage for a lot of people than to rent. But many people are just not in a situation where, you know, they're able to make that transition to homeownership. You know, so there is a housing shortage here in Columbus. We have, you know, high rates of homelessness and housing instability. I see that, you know, I work with a lot of individuals with housing instability in my criminal cases. And then I'm also working as a realtor. I do have a lot of people who are trying to make that transition from renting, and it is possible. So I would encourage people, you know, if you're able to save some money, that would be, you know, a good thing to do to save so that you can make that transition from renter to home ownership. However, there is, there's a huge housing shortage on the market. It's really a seller's market. Houses are selling within days sometimes. There's very low housing inventory right now. And so a lot of that you see, coming from the pandemic. And then certainly, Bob, I'd like to hear more about what's going on with the area commissioners and what building projects are being planned for Old Town East and King Lincoln area where we're located. I do think that people are certainly, developers are certainly looking at our neighborhood as one that they can develop and make a buck. It could be a good investment, but I'd like to also preserve the neighborhood for the ability of just everyday people to be able to continue living here. A lot of my neighbors have been in our neighborhood for 40 years, longer than that, decades longer than I've been here. And I want to be able to continue to see my neighbors thrive and be able to stay in their homes. And so that also so that their children and other relatives will be able to afford to buy or rent in our neighborhood and be close to family members.
Well, on the Near East Side, there's always been this overleaf, historical overleaf, to protect the historical character of the neighborhood. Parts of it are actually in historically designated zones on Broad Street. Some houses, such as mine, is actually on the historical register. So, but what's happening in part is the incentive of 100% tax abatement for 15 years. If you're building new or if you're totally gutting and rehabbing a house. So all these new developments, which cost the most, come with no taxes. So someone like yourself who didn't, or someone like myself, I'm paying almost the equivalent of a mortgage in taxes because they're driving up the cost of the land, right? The cost of the homes. So the ones that don't get the tax breaks are paying more and more of the taxes. And you're listening to WGRN 94.1, The Other Side of the News. I'm speaking with the local realtor here on the East Side and attorney and my law partner, Connie Goodell Newton.
Yes.
Talking about how it seems real unfair that the wealthier you are and the more you can buy these new developments that don't look like they belong in the neighborhood, the less you pay in taxes. In many cases, you pay zero in taxes.
That's right. I mean, certainly a lot of these new builds don't maintain the character of the neighborhood. They don't look historical or really match the neighborhood. They're kind of three-story high luxury condos, which is not really something that we had.
Four and five stories.
Three, yeah.
Three was the recommended, overleaf for the historical, guidelines for the area. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, let's take it up to 3.5. Let's take it up to 4. Let's take it up to 5. Mm-hmm. And again, over where Yellow Brick Pizza is, there's going to be a huge, massive development, right across the street.
Yeah, Bob. It's interesting. I mean, I guess on one hand, I would say that if they can bring more housing to Columbus, that could be a good thing. I do worry about the quality of the housing, the density, and also, is it affordable? I want to have affordable housing. I don't necessarily want to have a bunch of luxury condos that are too expensive and gentrify the neighborhood. I want my neighbors, and particularly my African American neighbors who've been here for a long time historically, we live in a historically Black neighborhood. I don't want to see people pushed out away from their, from their families and their conveniences. So I hope that the housing that goes up will be somewhat diverse, that there will be some proportionality of affordable housing included in those plans. Do you know, since you're with NEAC, have they talked about affordable housing when these developments are going up?
Well, they talk about it. The problem is often a debate on what is affordable housing.
Right, $1,500 a month for like a two bedroom, is that affordable?
No, that's precisely the problem is what is affordable. And there's been a tendency among many people who develop in this area or often who are new that what they see as affordable really is market rates.
Yeah.
And the market rates go up in part because people don't have to pay taxes. They're getting 100% 15-year tax break. Hence, they can buy more house because they don't have to pay the taxes. So, there's these movements to try and set aside some affordable housing. But, what's affordable housing? You know, they consider low-end housing like $1,000 a month. And with what people make, you know, the question of the fight for 15, if you make $15,000 or $15 an hour, that's $30,000 a year. So, you know, I mean, how much of that is, if you're even paying $1,000, that's, $12,000. You're paying far more than the recommended quarter of your income.
Yeah. And Bob, a lot of employers don't want to give people full-time hours, so they may not.
Full-time benefits off.
Yeah. I mean, $15 an hour doesn't mean that they're necessarily working full-time. I've heard that at some of the like UPS and FedEx, they want to get 8 hours of work out of somebody during 5 hours, you know? So they're really pushing their workers hard a lot of times, really pushing people to the physical limit, like those employers like Amazon, they really work their workers very hard. And, you know, a lot of times we'll give them 5 hour shifts. So I would just point that out as well, that you can't, a lot of people have different situations with their economic situation. So when I was in college, I was always looking for a room that was like $200 with a few friends. So it might be like $1,000 to rent the whole place with five of your friends. So to me, that was affordable housing when I was in college.
No, getting three people piled on top of each other on a couch.
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, that was campus housing, right?
Yep, yep, that's right, yep.
All into old Victoria.
But I would say, there has been a calculation of like one third of your money goes to rent, one third goes to food, one third goes to other stuff. If you're low income, a lot of times that is kind of the reality for a lot of people. And so that makes for a very tight budget.
So any ideas on what the solutions are here on the Near East side?
I think trying to stay within the historical character is good. Ending or reducing some of the tax abatements. They do need to be contributing to society, just like the rest of us have to when we pay our taxes. Obviously, our schools still need that money. And I would just say, when new developments go up, there does need to be a real plan for real affordable housing.
And they need to, as well. I mean, yep. Look at the problems over in Victorian Village, for example. I mean, essentially, they keep getting variances. And they don't have to provide the parking, and people have no place to park. So people have to buy permits to park in front of their house.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't like that, Bob. I mean, I have been parking in front of my own house for free. I sure don't want that to change. but I also don't want my neighborhood parked up, I guess, by a bunch of people who don't live there, or if there's just not enough room. Yeah, I think that needs to be, you know, considered as well. I do think that, you know, our neighborhood has a lovely character. It's a has a lovely neighborhood feel. I feel safe in our neighborhood. And so I do think that watching out for the housing density is something to, you know, maintain the character of our neighborhood, to make sure that, you know, the people who are here have enough room and everything, that it's not getting overcrowded. But also, you know, I do worry about an influx of people bringing housing cost up, housing expense up. There's more demand, more people, you know. But on the other hand, it is good just to create more housing for people as well. I do think that too much luxury housing could be a bad thing. Want to have good quality stuff that goes up there, but doesn't need to be, you know, marble countertops everywhere or something like that. I know that's the trend right now, but I would just say simple, affordable housing would be great. Leave it, you know, so everybody has enough space.
I hear you there. Enough space for everyone, a little diversity. I walk the neighborhood regularly almost every day, you know, during this pandemic. And occasionally I stop by your house, mm-hmm. deliver the mail, among other things. But when I'm thinking about it, what I'm seeing is a lot of evictions. So not only are you seeing these new houses, you're seeing that a lot of people are being dumped who are clearly renting from some of the older, larger Victorian homes.
Yeah, you know, Bob, these are troubled times. I am happy to see that Biden has some new, you know, there's some developments with Biden coming in. He's undoing a lot of Trump's policies and is, I believe, extending the moratorium on evictions. You know, I have certainly heard of evictions still happening despite what's going on with COVID. I do think that we need to allow people to just stay in their homes and shelter in place right now. So I do hope that there will be programs to prevent evictions that work for both the landlord and the tenant, because obviously a lot of landlords are just, you know, they're doing this for their livelihood, you know, trying to take care of some buildings and some tenants to have income. They may have mortgages, you know, so I think that there are certainly programs that we can utilize to assist both landlords and tenants so that we can allow people to shelter in place during COVID.
All right. And you appear to be sheltering in place, but still doing a law. So how does that work?
It's been all right, Bob. I've been very lucky, I think, to be able to transition to working from home. I do have some Zoom hearings and things like that. I take collect calls from jail, trying to avoid doing a lot of in-person jail visits. I was exposed to COVID recently when I did a jail visit. So fortunately,
Tested and you're healthy?
I'm healthy. I tested negative, in general, I can take phone calls from jail, and that would be preferred. You know, it's difficult times. I know at least one lawyer who has died from COVID and a judge. So I think that we do need to be very careful. I hope that public defenders will be some of the first people to be vaccinated after teachers. That's something I don't hear anybody talking about, is public defenders, court personnel, probation officers, people who have to work with the public to keep things running in the justice system, as much as you could say that it runs in the first place. But I do think it's important to make sure that people who are working with the public, like public defenders, you know, who are provided under the Sixth Amendment, constitutionally guaranteed that you have an attorney. Public defenders need to be vaccinated, and other attorneys as well.
All right, we got about a minute or so left. Any thoughts? And again, if people need to get a hold of you at Fitragus Goodell Newton, I'd be the Fitragus, you'd be Goodell Newton. How can
that's
they?
That's right. Yep, our website is FGNLegal at and you can also email me at fgnlegal@gmail.com. I also you can text me on my cell phone. It's 614-288-1082. That's the best way to reach me if you have a legal issue. I'd be happy to screen your case and talk with you. So
and they can Zoom you?
Yeah, we can do Zoom. Not having a lot of in-person meetings, but we're doing a lot over phone and Zoom and still are going to court.
And if they want to get a hold of you as a realtor, your other job.
Yeah, that's right. They can still email me or call or text 614-288-1082. And my email address personally is cgoodellnewton@gmail.com. You can look me up. I'm with Red One Realty. It's been a lot of fun the past year. I enjoy houses and neighborhoods and people. So yeah, I'm happy to help. And any real estate law issues as well, I can also kind of help with contracts and things like that.
All right. Thank you, Connie Goodell Newton.
Okay, Bob. Thanks. It's been great talking with you. I will talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks for being on the other side of the news.
All right.
All right. Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fitragus.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.